You ready?
This is the Mike Salk Show
on Seattle Sports Station.
Are you ready?
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Are you ready for a good day?
How many different types of Mariners fans do you think you know? 5, 6, 10?
Like a boy band character, there's one of everything.
Right, like there's a lot of, yes, different pieces of the fan base represented. And I would imagine if you were at the park, you said this weekend, Justin, on Saturday night, I wonder how many of the different groups you could actually recognize. So I came up with 6 off the top of my head. I'd be curious if I'll list these out. If you guys want to jump in, text some others that I'm missing. I got 6 categorizations of Mariners fans, okay?
Okay.
So most of them, I think you'll easily recognize them. And then if I'm missing some, let me know. 206-421-3776, Mac and Jack's text line. So you've got obviously angry, bitter, same old Mariners fan, right? Everybody knows one. Certainly if you're online on social media, you've run into them. You may have muted at least one of them or more by now. Just no matter what happens, same old Mariners.
I don't want to characterize all of them. In my experience, in my friend group, these are the guys that are usually huge Seahawks fans who revel in the Mariners being bad.
Right. Like, it's the best thing in their life. Yeah. Doesn't matter what happens.
I'm right again.
Yep. Claim same old Mariners. Yeah. They egg you on. They're in your face. They're a really challenging group for me anyway. And they don't often look at the whole picture. They just point to the result. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter. They can get 5 of the facts wrong.
Funny that they're challenging to you, because coming from the East Coast, I feel right at home with those fans. I feel like that's pretty standard.
It is. Yeah. I left the East Coast for a reason. It's nice. It's nice not being there anymore, quite frankly.
The SpongeBob meme where it's like leaning forward with the big nose?
Yeah.
It's like, that's the same old Mariners, I told you.
All right, so that's one, is the same old Mariner fan. 2 is the kind of lovable loser Mariner fan who kind of embraces that same role and is like, yeah, but it's fun and it's cool.
It's a badge of honor to root for the bad team.
Yes, exactly. They're sort of into the idea that they're, long-suffering, and they believe long-term that it'll all kind of work out, and this is just something they've got to go through. But it's fun, and, you try to, make the best out of it as you go.
I mean, I've felt that a long time as a Bengals fan.
They're also, that lovable loser, also really, really like 1995. And are willing to point to it all the time.
Yeah,
like that, there's a big section of... Now, are you saying that's a separate group?
No, I'm saying that I think a lot of fans are still, no matter what characterization you have, are willing and happy to point back to 95.
I don't know. Some of these don't remember 1995. I'm going to go through the rest of this list. Okay. I think it's the lovable loser Mariner fan that points to it the most. And I'm cool with that group. Number 3 is sort of the pen creature.
The pen creature.
Yeah, you get the bleacher creatures back
yes.
east. It's sort of the pen creature.
I mean, isn't Justin a pen
I'm
creature?
I'm a pen creature.
Yes.
It's the place where people go to imbibe comfortably without judgment. You can have a good time regardless of what's happening on the field.
Right.
It's usually a reunion of types. So it's your neighborhood bar.
Right.
That, comes around in the summer.
And maybe you know something about baseball. Maybe not. Maybe you're watching the game. Maybe not. Maybe you're looking at the game. Maybe not.
Right.
Maybe you're watching something else on television or listening to music or talking to people or whatever.
Maybe
there's
you have
a
other
game
motivations
on.
Out there.
Maybe you don't even know that there's a game. Maybe you don't know the name of one player who plays for the team, but you can cheer when other people cheer, and in the meantime, you're having a great time.
Absolutely true.
So I would put that one number 3.
Pen
creatures. I'm not ranking these. They're just I'm just listing them. The next one is fan who comes to one game a year and asks everybody around them, hey, who's this guy? Where'd they get him from?
Yeah, that's a good point. Because, I mean, you're not going to spend the money on, usually, but you bought a bleacher seat or something. So you're not going to sit up there and watch closely and really diagnose and be in every pitch.
Or you only go to one game a year, so you kind of splurge with your family and maybe you have decent seats or whatever.
Yeah.
And, but you just, you're not paying any attention throughout the year, but when you're there, you're in the moment, and maybe there was a time where you liked baseball more, and so you're like, oh, who's this guy? Hey, and there's a lot of questions.
Yeah, you're the fourth friend on the group of tickets, and they couldn't get the one person dropped out. It's like, hey, you want to come to the game? And
like, yeah, all right, I'll come with my friends.
Cannot tell you how many times I've had the conversation in the pen of somebody leaning over and doing the, so are the Mariners supposed to be good this year?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, all right.
Right? That's an interesting
Where'd
character.
Where'd you come in from?
They're also, every time I've noticed this for the last few years, and they're not alone, they point to the extra line on the scoreboard and like, hey, what's that for? And it's the mound visits. Yeah. Like, they're really interested in the mound visits. Like, hey, I've never seen that before. I haven't been to a game in 5 years. What's up with the mound visits thing?
It's one of my, actually, now that you say it, it's one of my favorite fans because I get to like,
you sound like an expert.
Some of my favorite things, you know, like, it's, and I can show them around the stadium generally because if they haven't been there, they don't know,
right?
Yeah. Wait, you give out tours of the stadium
I
to random people?
I love giving tours of the stadium. Yes, one of my dreams used to be to be one of the ride the Ducks thing, just so I could give tours of Seattle.
You'd be good at that.
I would love to.
I'd kind of like to go to Libby with you, so I could get a tour of your hometown.
I'd happily do
I don't
that.
Know how long
too.
It would take?
It's not a very long tour.
It's a very short tour,
but I would be happy to do that.
All right. Fifth type of Mariner fan is the obsessive, positive Mariner fan. This is slightly different from the lovable loser. Sort of seems to accept their lot in life. This is the obsessive, positive. Reads Lookout Landing, is on all the chat threads, believes every year will be the year. That is a complete, you know, it's a cousin, but it's a slightly different fan.
Yeah, that's my buddy Dunk.
Yeah.
Shout out to Dunk. I also love this fan because it's a good place to go when you start to tip off the edge and you text that one friend. It's like, hey, pull me back.
Mm-hmm.
Why should I unplug the toaster?
Yeah, and you need that person in your life, right? The person who, no matter what, Kelnick's going to be great. He's going to pull through, and this guy's going to do that, and just wait until so-and-so gets here, and they're going to make a deal for this. Like, there's a it's a really important fan to have around because, yeah, there are moments, like, right until the final hit last night where you're like, geez, it's real tempting to become angry, bitter, same old Mariner fan, and it's nice to have that guy kind of pull you back, or girl, and pull you back into, you know, at least the realm of the normal.
Yeah, show me the positives. We got a good one. We won April fan.
Oh, yeah.
Enjoys the annual Mariners hot start, checks out, starts looking forward to next April.
The last one for me is, and I'm sure there are more, so again, text in if you have other fans that I'm missing. 206-421-3776 is a text line. East Coast transplant who considers this to be their second team.
Oh, by East Coast, you mean the Kirkland Red Sox fans?
Well, no, those are people from Kirkland who've become Red Sox fans.
Yeah.
That's a different thing. Okay. I mean person who's moved here because Seattle's doubled in size in the last few years and is from the Northeast and loves the Mets, or they love the Yankees, the Red Sox, or the Phillies, or whatever. But they're here, and so they're like, yeah, the Mariners are kind of my second team. And they root for them until their team comes to town, and then, like, they switch their allegiance in a moment.
That's a good point. And when you have those conversations, all of my conversations, by the way, start in the pen.
Yes.
So when you have those conversations with them, it's like, oh, yeah, like, who's your favorite player? Whatever. Well, they have to immediately give you the caveat.
Right.
Well, I'm actually a Cubs fan. I mean, I moved here 5 years ago. I work for Amazon, so I cheer for the Mariners, but I'm a Cubs fan.
Yeah, and I found that became impossible for me. I thought that was something that I could do, and it turns out that's not who I am.
Do both?
Yeah, I can't do that. Like, I learned pretty quickly that once I started to root for the Mariners, everything else kind of went away. I was not able to be like, oh, this is my second favorite team. I have another team that I root for more. And I realized it once, like, you know, those teams play each other. Like, oh, yeah, no, I'm rooting for the Mariners.
Yeah.
I'm rooting for the Seahawks. Right. I realized that when Russell beat Tom Brady in that game. And I was like, oh, I've just become a Seahawks fan here. I am rooting for Russ and the Seahawks. And I hope the Patriots lose. And I had never felt that way before. You know, that was like a big moment. But lots of other people don't go through that.
Uh-huh.
They maintain that sort of allegiance to their home team, their hometown team. But they kind of like the team where they're living.
That's why I can't do fantasy. I can't cheer for more than one thing. And I can't look for the victories in other players from other teams that I don't root for.
Right.
That's why I have a really tough time like separating the two.
But you're a person who roots for the Bengals and the Seahawks.
Yeah. I mean, my dad is a lifelong Seahawks fan, so I wanted him to be happy. Most of my when I moved here, the entire city is happy when the Seahawks win. It's hard to not be plugged into the emotional grid.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, the Bengals weren't even a real team for the most of my life, let's be honest.
We've got excuse makers is one. I think that's definitely true. One says that's Salk, but I'm not sure which one you're referring to, so you might have to clarify a little bit. I think at times I feel like all of these fans.
Well, there's the apprehensive fan who's like not even sure how to feel anymore, and it's like, I don't know, dude, wake me up in September. Like, I
want to get in, but I can't get hurt. I really want to enjoy it, but here's the problem with that fan. In order to enjoy, to truly enjoy the success, you've got to go through the pain and suffering. Mm-hmm. That's part of sports. That's part of the fun of this whole thing.
The fan trying to start the wave? No, that's not a fan.
No, that's not a fan.
The fan who only...
The fan trying to start a wave should be banished from the ballpark and removed.
That should be the first question you're asked at the gate. The fan who only exists for the prospects and wants to demonstrate their insider knowledge? They're hipsters.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, there's definitely a hipster element. That's probably one that's missing is the hipster fan. So, all right, keep them coming. 206-421-3776. Brock Heward coming up in 20 minutes after Need to Know next.
Need to Know.
15 minutes past every hour with Mike Salk.
Here's what you need to know up first.
Well, we know a lot about the process, and it certainly matters, but sooner or later, you got to have results that go with it. Thankfully, the Mariners able to come from behind yesterday and get a win. We've given a lot of love to Ty France for the game-winning single that was much needed, but you know what? Let's throw some love at Abraham Toro as well. They don't get there. They don't get to the 10th. Were it not for his home run in the bottom of the ninth, good for him.
And the right-handers, 0-1 pitch, swing and a well-hit ball deep to right field, down the line into the corner, gone, goodbye baseball! Abraham Toro ties it up with his fourth home run of the year.
Second in as many nights, hit one of those, I always call it an Alex Rodriguez home run. You're down 9-1 in the ninth and you hit a solo shot. Like, yeah, it's a home run, but...
Had the sad home run.
Where were you when you really needed you? That to me is an A-Rod home run. Well, maybe it led to a little bit of confidence because Toro hit anything but yesterday. A huge, huge home run to tie the game up, and they end up winning in the 10th. Big story, of course, was George Kirby. He was tremendous yesterday. Really great from start to finish. I would say his skipper was pretty impressed with the stuff.
Went out and throw strikes. That's what George Kirby does. And you know, the stuff was better at it than what we've seen at any point in spring training for me today. The life on the fastball, can get about 14, 15 swings and misses today. You know, didn't walk anybody.
Yeah, he didn't. He was really good. Six innings, shutout ball, seven strikeouts, four hits. And Scott, you know, alludes to that fastball. It's tremendous. 98 miles an hour with a ton of run to his arm side. It's really difficult to hit the way it's moving like that. Heck, I was actually worried about how challenging it would be to catch. It looked like he nearly took Torrens' glove off a couple of times with the way he was throwing. So really, really excited about the future there for George Kirby. And they needed the win, too. A heartbreaking loss Friday night. Jared Kelnick looked like he had put them ahead for good in the eighth.
There goes Julio. Here's the pitch. Swinging it. Swatted out to the gap. Right center field. Carrying back. Deep. Gone! Home run. Pinch hit. Two-run dinger by Jared Kelnick. And Kelnick is sprinting around the bases. He is jacked up. He crosses home. He almost form tackles Julio. And he is high-fiving and punching his way all the way to Scott Service at the top of the steps.
What if he had form tackled Julio? Can you imagine that celebration?
Trying to explain that after the game?
Sorry, I just kind of got lost in it. I decided to drill my teammate. He had it coming. No, it was pretty exciting.
Fixation.
Unfortunately, Paul Sewald blew his first save of the year just a few minutes later. So they'll get back to it tonight in Philadelphia or against Philadelphia. They're in town for three. Should be a good chance for these bats to really get going. The pitching staff has struggled for the Phillies. Their bats are good, but their arms not so much. So looking forward to this series.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Seahawks rookie minicamp in the books. Most of the draft picks were full go. A few of them had to sit, but they still contribute in some meaningful way. When asked who stood out, Pete Carroll pretty clear how much he liked his new tackles. All right.
I was so caught by the draft picks. You know, I thought everybody was able to show something, and the tackles jump out right off the bat. You know, both guys look well-equipped physically. They look like they can move like we would hope they can move. They're both bright kids, and we'll pick up their stuff, so the process is underway. I was really fired up about that.
Yeah, the athleticism is definitely noticeable. I'd be shocked if both of those guys, both Charles Cross and Abraham Lucas, aren't starting week one of the NFL season. Mentioned last week that KJ Wright would like to return here to Seattle. Pete Carroll asked about that, too. Gave a little bit more of a vague answer.
I've already talked to him about stuff for the future and all that. I did hear that he talked about playing, and we've already talked about that.
Yeah, we'll see what direction this goes. It's hard to see how KJ would fit in this defense with this scheme on this roster. He doesn't really rush the passer as a primary thing. It's, you know, stand up outside linebacker in this system. They need to move forward and get after the passer. I don't know whether he's going to play inside linebacker at this stage in his career. So, you know, sort of hard to see where he fits. But if there's a way for him to contribute, to be around the team, I'm sure, obviously, they would be interested. And I think that's what Pete's alluding to there.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
One of the coolest Kentucky Derbies ever run. I mean, the call of it really explains. Rich Strike was the winner, wasn't even supposed to be in the race, only added late because of another horse that was scratched. Didn't know he was running until Friday, so the day before, and halfway down the stretch, you still don't hear his name. In fact, in this great call of the Derby, you won't hear the words Rich Strike until the very end when he wins.
Epicenter and Zozo's in behind them. Cyberknife swings up to the outside. Sandon gets the rail run, and they're into the stretch. And it's Fessier, Crown Pride, and Epicenter is coming up on the outside. Epicenter has taken the lead as they arrive into the final furlong. Sandon is coming after him. Epicenter and Sandon, these two, stride for stride. Simplification down the outside is next. They're coming down to the wire. Epicenter's ended. Rich Strike is coming up on the inside. Oh, my goodness. The longest shot has won the Kentucky Derby.
It's pretty amazing. That's a great call.
Fantastic call.
You know what's, first of all, a few things. One, anybody else think of Dave Wyman and his commercial every time you heard Cyberknife?
Yes.
More images than I
Every time I hear the call, and I was watching the post parade beforehand, I was like, eh, there's Wyman's horse, Cyberknife. And then two, calling a horse race seems really hard. I mean, like, you got to know all the numbers and what they were, the colors and who they relate to, and, you know, be able to quickly determine who's going where.
Entire things, 2 minutes or something?
Yeah, they do a heck of a job, man. Well, that was,
and
that
people
was really
were,
cool.
People were saying it was a really good call on Twitter. And, of course, you see some of the people come in like, well, it's not a good call because he didn't realize till the end. And I'm like, no, I think that highlights how he came from out of nowhere and you never thought he was going to catch the other horses.
Totally agree with that. NBA action, two of the series that looked pretty well non-competitive are now knotted at two. Dallas winning two in a row to get back in it. Same with Philly. James Harden finally showed up as they won yesterday. Milwaukee up 2-1 over Boston. They'll try to extend that tonight. Same with Golden State playing against a Memphis team that is likely missing Ja Morant. Tweaked his knee. And obviously, if they lose, that will be the only reason why. NHL, four series tied up at two. Yesterday, wins by Boston, St. Louis, Tampa, and Los Angeles. That's everything you need to know.
We got a couple more Mariners fans.
Oh, yeah? Who else you got there?
You missed the, where's the insert player here who hasn't been on the team for years?
Where's Dan Wilson?
Where's Zanino?
Right.
He was so good at framing pitches. Yeah. That's a good text from the 425.
Yeah, that's definitely a good one. All right. We'll talk to Brock here in a minute, get some of his thoughts on rookie minicamp and Jarrett Kelenic as well. And then, of course, ranking to finish things up. Don't go anywhere. It's Mike Salk Show here on Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
Brock and Salk.
With my brains and your brawn, we'll make an excellent team.
Every morning at 7:45 and 9:30, presented by Top Fitness Store on the Mike Salk Show.
Brock Ewart is my hero.
What Brock Ewart says?
No, he's not a burner.
Subscribe to receive new episodes of the Brock and Salk podcast at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Well, good morning, Brock.
Well, good morning, Michael.
Have you heard any of the sound of Pete talking about Nick Paul?
No.
Oh, you're going to love this. I'm so glad you haven't heard it yet. I can't wait to play this for you. I have two cuts of Pete. So Nick Paul's 385 pounds, right?
Kind
nose
of.
Tackle move.
Kind
for, well, right. Well, that's part of the story here. Okay. But anyway, listed at 385. Here's Pete talking about him.
I mean, the only guy I've seen that big in my life is Dave Baker, who used to run the Hall of Fame. This is the biggest man I ever saw now. He did okay. You know, I looked at him down there, and we were doing the bags. It's about 30 yards of running, weaving through the bags. And I thought, I was thinking about Nick, and he's looking at those bags, and I'm like, oh, man, that's a long ways down there. You know, take those four bills plus and go show what he can do. But he worked hard today and admire that, you know, that he came out and gave a good effort first day. We'll see. Take it one day at a time.
You like that? That's right up your alley.
Why am I just picturing Kyle Brown's impersonation? Well,
I know, and how much he hates David Baker. Here's some more.
Did you see him? If he has any clue about taking care of business in there, you can't tell which gap he's lining up on, you know, so it'll be a problem for the offense right from the beginning.
385 on the roster, that's...
Dig it up a bit. I don't think the scale even registered what he was. We went to an alternative scale.
Brock.
I texted you and said what?
Is that the big fella at 66, right?
Yeah, but even more so. I've never seen numbers on a jersey look so small.
Yeah, like stretched across them.
In my entire life, it looked like a baby jersey. And trust me, if you or Maura or Justin put that 66 on, whatever it is, 5X, it would hang to your feet.
Right.
It looked like a baby jersey. The 66 didn't even stretch like nipple to nipple. It was just like a bib.
Dude.
It was tiny on him. I'm honestly, he devoured that jersey.
I think what's so great, like Pete's seen a lot of big dudes. I mean, think about some DJ Fluker and some of the big guys that we've seen around here over the years. And Pete's like, yeah, nothing compared to this guy.
No. He must have been, was he 6'8"?
Yeah, 6'7", somewhere in that range.
6'7", 6'8".
He's got an interesting build, too. Like, he's not that wide. I mean, he is, but he's maybe it's just sort of like it doesn't.
And he's a converted O-line.
Yeah, because he's kind of got some height to him, and it's like a high butt, high waisted thing.
Yeah.
Dude, he was fascinating to watch. It was pretty cool being over there. So, to more of the real story of guys that are going to make this team, the talk was the tackles, and for good reason. If these two dudes work out and they end up with bookend tackles drafted, what does that do for an organization in this offense?
Well, let's turn back the clock to pre-Mike Salk dates and turn it back to Walter Jones and Hutchinson. Not even bookend tackles, but just the most dominant offensive line in the league. And what did that do in 04 and 05 and 06 and took you to a Super Bowl? And yeah, I mean, it builds a foundation. Philly has been very, very good and some different moving pieces at times, but it's had arguably the best offensive line. Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger, right? Even in DK over the last 4, 5, 6 years is able to put together a top offense. He's had one of the best offensive lines. That is when that position group is right. And I've always argued this. When that position group is right, there's no more dominant position group on a team because there's 5 of them. And they usually, when combined, weigh over a ton or near close to it, right? And it's a ton of personality. It's a ton of enforcement. It's a ton of enthusiasm. My favorite football team I ever played on, bar none, was the 96 Huskies. When you got in a huddle and you're like, yeah, doesn't really matter what's facing us across on the other side. Olin Krutz and Benji Olsen and Bob Sapp and Tony Coates and Mustafa Sobey and others. Lynn Johnson, let's go. Let's go. I will take my chances with anybody. And obviously Marshawn stirred the drink. But let's not forget Russell Okung, Bruno Giacomini, Max Unger, James Carpenter. That crew that moved people. How much fun was that, Mike? How much fun was it in 2012 and 2013 and 2014 when you were the enforcer? How much fun is it on a hockey team when you've got a couple enforcers? And, yeah, I mean, we're putting the cart well before the horses here because these are two incredibly young guys that have a change in system and are going to have to learn the NFL game and speed and everything else. And there will be bumps in the road. But to your question, like if that's right, it sets the foundation for your entire team.
By the way, we got a texter here wondering if Nick Paul is built like the Big Show, the wrestler. I don't think so, but you're close. He's almost built more like the Big Boss Man. If you can remember back in the day, you remember the Big Boss Man?
Kind of.
He's kind of built like that guy. That guy was also 6'7".
Well, give me the closest Seahawk the last 10 years.
There's none. There's none. There's nobody that has looked like him.
And
Brock.
He's not Ted Washington, right?
No, because he's
blocks
taller.
Out the sun. Yeah.
Yeah. No, he's... Wow. Gilbert Brown, no. Gilbert was short and squat. Like,
right.
This guy is unique, man. You gotta get a chance to see him.
Well,
if you
come
said
down
to training
I
camp.
Texted you, full transparency for our audience.
Yeah.
I texted you knowing you were going over there yesterday and said, you know, just give me your thoughts.
Yeah.
And you thought Abe Lucas was as striking as anybody?
He was
outside
the person.
Outside of 66?
He was the person that jumped out most. I think I was telling Maura, if you just saw numbers but didn't know who the names were or anything, you'd be like, who's 72? That guy's the best player on the team.
Yep.
Yeah, he just really stood out.
You know, and kudos, honestly, to Mike Leach and that staff that recruited him. Because I told you, when I met him at Archbishop Murphy, either as a freshman or a senior in high school, he was 6'6", huge hands, but he couldn't have been 240 pounds. And it's very easy for people at times, and a lot of folks make a ton of mistakes projecting, going, oh, yeah, he can weigh 300. Yeah, we'll put 60, 80, 90, 100 pounds on him, and he'll be able to play. You don't know that, right? You better be pretty good at what you're doing. You better be pretty skilled at, you know, and I'm not going to go crazy into the body, you know, projection game, but you better be right. Otherwise, knees, hips, backs blow out. I've seen it. Oh, yeah, he could put on 50 pounds. No, he can't. Mm. No, he can't. His frame can't do that. Abe Lucas's frame put on 70, 80 pounds, and you saw it, Mike. He still looks like an athlete.
He looks like he could go run yes. a mile without a problem. Yes. It was pretty cool seeing it. Do you remember your rookie minicamp?
Did not have a rookie minicamp.
They didn't do
got
that?
Got thrown right to the Wolves.
Yeah.
Took my shirt off, got fined, right. Nearly choked out by House Ballard.
It's a rough start.
Kitna buried me when we went into the locker room. I thought we were in the trust tree, and I was like, do you think our coach smokes? QB coach, do you think he smokes? His teeth are just, and I'm like right next to him. They're like brown. And so, of course, we come back in the meeting, and Kitna's like, hey, coach, Brock's got a question for you. I'm like, what? No, I don't. Yeah, Brock's got a question for you. No, I don't. Yeah, you do. You were asking about his teeth in the locker room.
Jeez. Right?
So, yeah. So I got thrown right.
You could have used a rookie minicamp.
Fire. Oh, yes, I could have. Very much so.
Just a bunch of other rookies hanging out, kind of making mistakes together.
Oh, no. I got served a big, fat piece of humble pie right in my face. Ran blue right F short, two jet flanker drive. My first completion was to Brian Blades, who I grew up watching. Threw it to him. Why? I have no idea. When Holmgren asked, what were you looking at? You know, the linebackers. Right. Yeah, sure. Whatever. Try to come up with something for a game.
Staring at the linebackers.
Yeah. Game flying by me. Coach. I read it all the way. Linebackers dropped out of there. When in actuality, I'm like, okay, no Brian Blades. Get open. Throw it to him. Okay, good. Kind of. Not really.
What'd you think of Kelnick's celebration on Friday night?
Solid.
Yeah.
Yeah, solid.
Dude, he almost killed people. He was so pumped up. He's like practically punching Julio. It was pretty good.
What did I think of Kirby?
Yeah, what'd you think of Kirby?
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Yeah, I'm a lot more into this now. Titus has found one of his passions, which is pitching. And so we go to a guy and get to study this biomechanic stuff, and we watch these guys a little differently, and Kirby is smooth. I said to you, I'm concerned about Brash. It just didn't feel – it just felt erratic, right? I don't know how sustainable it felt just because the motion was everywhere. Kirby is locked and loaded. I'm not going to say Mark Pryor effortless.
Well, that's the comp for me.
It's along those lines.
Yeah, the difference, though, honestly, he throws like Pryor, right, just because it looks like he's playing catch. Mm. But I think the better comp that I've heard is Roy Halladay just because of the amount of arm side run that he's got. Oof. I mean, like – Pryor looked pretty straight.
Titus asked me that yesterday. Yeah, he's like, we were watching, and it was 97 up and away. And he's like, what pitch was that? And I was like,
they say it's a four-seamer, but it moves like a two-seamer.
It does. Yeah. He said, how does it move so much that, like, side to side?
I think it's just natural to his delivery. Whew. He just has crazy arm side run, which makes it pretty fun to watch. So.
Super fun.
All right, buddy. Good to talk to you. We'll do it later.
Okay.
Every day, 7:45 and 9:30. With Brock Heward, of course. Let's see, where do I want to follow up on? There's a bunch of stuff. I mean, you know, George Kirby yesterday. So I'm not a big DVR guy. I mean, I have one, obviously, but I don't use it a lot for sporting events because I hate, like, trying to watch a game, knowing the outcome, trying to avoid learning the outcome. Like, I generally will try to avoid that whole thing and either just watch a game live or kind of deal with the fact that I wasn't able to watch it. But I did DVR the game yesterday knowing that it was going to be Kirby's first start. And so I was out. I told you I was at Snoqualmie Casino for much of the afternoon for the big Mother's Day purse giveaway, which was a ton of fun. But I watched the end of the game. I saw the end. I saw the walk-off hit for Ty France. And that was sort of all I saw. I didn't get to see much of the early part. I didn't really get to see Kirby.
Same.
I legitimately went home last night when I got home, and I rewatched the entire game on DVR. I almost never do that. And it was great. It was really relaxing knowing that they had already won the game.
Did you fast-forward the Mariners' offensive
bats? No, because I kind of wanted to see how they got there and how frustrating it was leading up to it. But it was so much more relaxing having known the answer to how the whole thing was going to end.
We were sitting on the waterfront, and I looked up, and I was like, oh, it's still 1-0. Like, maybe I'm just going to put this one away and not feel sad for everybody.
Yeah.
And then I got the push notification that Toro hit the home run. I'm like, all right, we're back.
All right, we're back.
And I set my phone up on the table, and we were watching the end of the game.
Well, yeah, I ended up going back and watching the whole thing, and it completely kept my interest. I mean, I thought Kirby was dynamic to watch. I mean, it's interesting. We talked to him while we were down in spring training, and he's a pretty mild-mannered guy, right? Kind of mentioned that he looks like he should be in Leave It to Beaver. I mean, he's like a really sort of clean-cut-looking, you know, sort of... He looks like he's from the 50s, kind of got the 50s haircut thing, and he's very, as we said, very quiet, calm, mild-mannered. It turns out, though, that there is a little something to him. He's got a little bit of a competitive streak. Blowers pointed out yesterday the way he sort of, you know, had a little walk around the mound after one of his seven strikeouts. I mean, there's definitely a little competitive edge. And as it turns out, he kind of commented on that after the game and talking about Matt Brash, who was sent down in order to make room for him.
Yeah, me and Brash were competing. You know, he's one of my best buddies, and I was obviously happy for him. But, you know, there's always that competitive side to it. I wanted to be here. He knew that too. But just tried to be where my feet were, just go out in Double A and compete, and eventually got the call. So I'm happy with it.
You know, one thing that's amazing to me often about athletes is how well, like, how they have good sayings like that. And they've been around so many coaches, and they've heard it, and they really seem to take in and accept a lot of those sayings, like be where my feet are.
Yeah.
I mean, that's to come out of his mouth, what is he, 23 years old? To have phrases like that come out so effortlessly, I always think is one of the sort of underrated cool things about professional athletes and guys like Kirby who are going to make it to the highest level. So
24.
24, I'm sorry, he's an old man. I shorted him a year.
Seasoned veteran.
All the way
to
24.
He does not look it. All I could think yesterday was like, these veterans have to be so annoyed that they're striking out with pitches this kid is throwing that he looks like a 16-year-old out there.
And I was like, oh, they're all about the same age. I forget that they're all young.
He's a 16-year-old throwing 98 miles an hour with ridiculous run and some pretty good breaking stuff and great command. So,
and the
really
day that they're all up in the starting rotation, too, when obviously Brash comes back, which I have no doubt will happen,
yeah.
And Julio, those guys have been through the Double-A system with the Travs and with a couple other teams together, and it's got to feel good. Right? Like, well, going to some of those games, there's 1,000 people there, and then walking out to T-Mobile when it's maybe sold out.
Yeah.
It's like, they're the future.
Well, and there's a few other guys coming as well. Like, don't think this is
Noel
it.
Yeah, Marte,
right?
Yeah.
The fact that this is, that these couple of guys are now up doesn't mean that's it. I mean, we're going to see Levi Stout in all likelihood this year. There's some bullpen arms that are going to be pretty impressive coming up through the system. You mentioned Marte, Noel Marte. I mean, like, there's some dudes. This is not the end of this process. There's a lot more interesting guys coming, so should be a really fun next couple of years. And to me, that's going to be part of the debate of this season, is they decided to kind of go in on this year as their win now year, which is great because it's time and you're ready for them to win now. And yet there's going to be this question of could they have waited one more year in order to continue to build up some more of the stockpile of their resources. By the way, do you see Trevor Story is hurt? His elbow's really bothering him.
Yep.
He was getting booed at Fenway.
Yeah, the elbow's not good. So the, you know, biggest move that people wanted them to make. Chris Bryant has been hurt. He started off playing really well. He's been hurt. Marcus Semien has done essentially bubkus for the Rangers. Really interesting how three of the biggest names that the Mariners were attached to. I know everyone, the same old Mariners crowd believes the Mariners screwed up and everyone's always good until they get here. Well, all three of those players are either struggling or injured. So kind of interesting spot for the Mariners. Let's do some ranking.
Got a list? Time to put it in order.
Fred Dwumfor's house. Top five meals that I have ever had.
This is Ranked.
To be honest, that list was really biased.
Brought to you by Carter Volkswagen. Every morning at 9:45 on the Mike Salk Show.
That top 10 list, I'm not buying that.
Ranked.
All right, we will do some ranking today. And this is in honor of the AAA pitcher that Kyle Lewis hit his home run off of yesterday. What's his last name?
His first name's Jansen. His last name's Junk.
Jansen Junk.
Junk.
Now, there's two ways you can go with this unfortunate name. You can go to the dirty, which we are not going to do, despite Maura trying to get us to. Maura petitioned hard to go for, you know.
There was a longer list of those type names than I expected.
It is very long.
Also, shout out Federal Way Washington, Jansen Junk.
Yeah, local kid.
Yep.
And a junk ball pitcher is not unfortunate. I mean, junk is a good thing to have when you're a pitcher. So I don't know if it's quite in the unfortunate name. In fact, it might be sort of very fortunate. It'd be like a pitcher whose last name is, I don't know.
Shoves.
Joey Shoves. Joey Punches Tickets.
Yeah, I was going to say Punches Tickets isn't quite a good last name, but it's there.
Joey punches tickets.
Or K.
So we're going to go with unfortunate names for your position.
For your position ranked.
Unfortunate names for your position ranked. All right. Number five has to be Chris Blewett, the kicker.
No, it's...
I've seen him like miss a field goal, and it's like the joke's just there automatically.
His name is Blewett. I mean, not an uncommon name, but if you're going to be a professional kicker, the last thing you want is Blewett. Do you ever see what's that movie, Copland?
No.
Ugh.
Man, you have seen an absurd amount of movies.
I mean, that's from the 90s.
That you somehow remember so many things from, too.
Well, it was a pretty good movie. De Niro and Sly Stallone, a bunch of other guys were all in that together.
Okay.
There's just that great De Niro scene. I gave you a chance to be a cop, and you blew it! And he says it over and over.
Whenever I hear blew it, I think of blew it pass.
Yeah. That's pretty.
It's a good pass.
You and I went through blew it pass together at some point.
We should do passes ranked.
Flutie pass. All right, number five was blew it. Number four... Now, this guy's a basketball player with the Clippers. Doesn't get a lot of playing time. His name is Jay Scrub. How do you not see that come?
These have got to be tough. I mean, I'm thinking of like junior high when I think of these tough last names. Oh. They've heard everything.
It's- right. But this isn't making fun. This isn't like walking, like everybody gathering around in a circle to tease them.
Yeah. And it's... And like Mora said, there are some other of the other direction some of these names could go that are probably tougher to deal with.
All right, number three is Homer Bailey. Guy's a pitcher. His last name is Homer. His first name is Homer. That's just unfortunate. It's not supposed to go that way. Now, he's a pretty good pitcher. He came up in, what, like 2007? He allowed 175 home runs in his career.
Ooh.
He was a pretty good pitcher, but his name is Homer Bailey. It's not what you're looking for. So he's number three.
Be a better for what would work for that? No other first name that was like it's not Strikeout Bailey. There's nothing.
I'm not putting on Taiwan Walker or Frank Berkowski. I feel like that's cheating. But number two on this list.
Oh, okay, because you have such high standards for the way you can bend names and
Mora
words in this
on
segment.
That one.
Mora, you got to understand the rules of the way this works. And it seems like you're just not getting it.
I will never understand the rules of the way
we've been doing this
works.
Show for like 8 months. You're nowhere closer to understanding the way this
target.
Works.
Rules ranked. There are no rules.
Number two, unfortunate names for your position. And Australian pitcher Grant Balfour has to be there. His name is
Balfour. Yeah. There's literally any other position in any other sport would have been fine. Your pitcher, Balfour.
You just learned to hit.
Yeah.
Right? Like, literally just, and same with Homer Bailey. Just step across, be a hitter.
Yeah.
But you got to be a pitcher at ball four? That doesn't work. And number one, and again, he probably could have played any other sport and he would have been fine, but as a professional golfer, Adam Shank?
That's it. Just the worst.
Come on, man. That's a challenge. So
we got a text in the 360. My cousin's doctor was named Dr. Coffin.
Yeah, that would worry me.
It's not what you need.
Incognito as an O lineman always got me. The 253 says that is funny. Not unfortunate, but funny.
Richie Incognito. Yeah, that's a good last name.
I mean, that sounds like a fake name. That's a name Michael Vick uses to check into a hotel. Ron Mexico and Richie Incognito.
931's telling me to embrace the chaos.
Yeah, Mora. Everything gets more fun once you embrace the chaos. All right, we're going to get out of here in a moment. Joe Fan will be with us tomorrow. Sounds like it's a big day on the station. John Schneider is going to be on later today with Wyman and Bob, I think at 3 o'clock this afternoon. So looking forward to hearing what he has to say
also
about the
draft.
Also
George Kirby himself.
Oh, good. On with Jake and Stacy today, so... A lot of good stuff. Make sure you keep it tuned here to the station all throughout your day or on seattlesports.com. We will be back, when, 6 a.m.? Are we still doing 6 a.m.? I thought we were done with that. Aren't we changing it to 7? When does that happen?
Kyle?
Anybody? Kyle, all right. Let's do 7 o'clock tomorrow. No, we'll do 6. We'll catch you then. We'll have all kinds of fun stuff to catch up on. Goodbye, everybody.